Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Winning Plays is back for the final edition of the 22-23 Celtics season. My name is Brian Robb, and back for the postmortem, Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston. This episode of the Winning Plays Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. Head on over to FanDuel.com/Boston to get your first no-sweat first bet. And Chris, I like to leave your court for a lot of these beginning of the podcast, so I'm going to start here. Do you want to talk about Game 7 at all, or do you just want to look ahead here? Because this is we can talk about the game, but it's not
good. Do we have to? So, I thought Jason Tatum had the perfect summation when someone was asking him about the sort of roller coaster nature of the season and missed opportunities. And he said, shit happens, and the past is the past. So that's the way I feel about Game 7. I don't know if we need to recap it. We can get angry about,
Let's talk about the series then. Let's talk about, I feel like the bigger picture here is like the series.
Okay.
Because this stinker in Game 7.
Mm-hmm.
Having to come back from win four games or whatever, like there's a lot there. They should have never been in this spot. This should have been a 2-1 deficit after game three, after a classic broke out. Because I feel after game two was the game that should be remembered the most about this series, as from a losing standpoint from the Celtics, because that was the game that was there. And
I feel like game one was there. Besides, then they started fumbling the ball.
But game two was like, I feel like the wrong players are on the court for game two. I guess.
Yeah,
that's my biggest thing.
You know, and ultimately that just circles back to an encapsulation of the year where, like, we talk a lot about blame pie. And I tell you all the time, like, I know people want to just, like, hone in on one person. Like, we've had our nights where we're mad at Missoula, and then we're mad at Jalen for 8 turnovers, and then we're mad at Tatum for being inconsistent. I mean, this is what it was for the Celtics. It was up and down and all over the place. And from night to night, you never knew what you were going to get. And ultimately, the coach never consistently put his team in the best position to win. I thought he figured out a little bit as that Heat series went on, made me feel a little bit better about moving forward. And yet, like, everyone's at fault here. Like, they all messed up in some form or another. And so we kept saying, I mean, how often did we come on this pod or my pod and say, like, it's going to bite them eventually. And somehow they managed to not bite them until a game. And not that it was game seven exactly, because like you said, it's the totality of the series. But they ran into a team that does know its identity, does play to a certain standard every night, and was just, you know, the fact that they got hot shooting during that series was enough to fell the Celtics. So, yeah, avoidable situation, though. And a lot of what could have been will occur this offseason.
From a Game 7 standpoint here, were you more disappointed with, like, the defense or the offense in terms of, like, how this game actually went? Because for as bad as, you know, the threes didn't go in, another brutal shooting night, the number of, like, mistakes made defensively, the lack of, like, cohesion on that end of the floor, which was, again, there at times, but then for it to, like, completely unravel like that was just, like, pretty jarring based on, like, what the the level of personnel you're supposed to have in this series.
I mean, what, they have 15 points in the first quarter, so it's hard for me not to be like, the offense was really frustrating because I didn't think they played with any pace. But it was always connected, right? Like, if you get stops, the more opportunity you get to go in transition, the easier you can make your life. And I go back to it. That's the Celtics in a nutshell. They just never made their lives easy. And could they have played defense to that level that they did in games 4 through 6 more often? Probably. And there were just some dumb lapses, some dumb lobs. And then, like, you know, Marcus threw one to the moon and then didn't get back on defense and they hit a three. And, it's just over and over, this team complicated its life and to the point where it finally caught up with them. And so I guess that's where I'm at. I thought both sides were nowhere near the level that they needed to be, nowhere near where they should have been in a game 7. And ultimately that's where I land overall. Like, how do you work that hard to get back from 0-3? How do you work that hard to get back to the doorstep of the finals after you said all, like, for the last 365 days, how much motivation that's been, and then turn in that much of a dud? Like, I don't want to hear about Tatum's ankle or like the struggles of the role players. How are you not locked in more in that moment? That's what's frustrating the most to me.
Yeah. It's like the defense in my, that's like one of the controllables. And here, Brian, like, for them not to be, you know, you saw some of the mistakes on the perimeter and things. Like, they were still there throughout the whole series, but they faded a bit in those 4 to 6 games. And then back when it's all on the line again, back when you come out of the gate strong, the Heat are not in a rhythm in those first 6 minutes at all. They score, what, like 6 points, you know, out of the gate until Malcolm Brogdon came into the game. And then it all kind of went haywire from there. And I don't know. The last thing I'll say about 7 is Malcolm Brogdon, those 7 minutes. Like, I don't know how many minutes too long that was, but that
probably
was
probably 7.
It's I don't think I've seen an air ball missed by that much before. For me, we had the perfect perspective on press row of like how unaligned that was. And for a guy who you admire the grit, you admire him trying to give it, like, he's obviously going to try to play, but that's a situation where, whether it's a training staff or Joe or whoever, like, or even Malcolm having the awareness, being like, you know, I'm not giving these guys anything.
Don't you have to in that situation be like the adult in the room and go, like, Malcolm, I know you want to be out there.
Yeah, you got to take it out of his hands.
Yeah, and so don't even give him the opportunity. It was a little disappointing that, and it's not like it swung the game, but it was just clear from the start that he didn't have it. And like, I know he wants to be out there, but, you know, in a moment like that, you just gotta ride with what you got. And on top of all that, Tatum getting hurt in the first play of the game, you know, go figure, when he's been healthy for almost the majority of the season, even Derek White limping off, you know, but you put yourself in that position. Didn't have to be at a game 7. And, you know, ultimately, that's where I fall back on it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I think ultimately the one good thing about this series is, like, Derek White as hopefully asserting himself as a clear starter for this team going forward. And now, like,
never say never, Rob.
Don't go there.
It was miraculous. He was out there for crunch time in game 6 and got him to the finish line. But look, I think there'll be a lot of, I keep saying, there'll be a lot of introspection this summer. And I hope everyone from the front office to the coaches will take inventory of how everything played out. And one of the main positives should be, geez, when Derek White's on the court, good things happen. And so hopefully they play him a whole bunch more next year and understand that. Like, if you were saying who the Celtics big three is right now, are you putting who's in there? Is it like, if you, or the three players you want, like, the most in that core? And I love Marcus Smart.
Oh yeah.
But, like, Derek White fits what the Jays do the best, probably. And so he needs to be, when is that extension eligible? Is he
That's a good question. I think I want to say it's probably maybe sometime in the fall or something like that.
That feels right, because he's entering the second to last year of his deal. So if I'm trying to think of the early extensions like Smart did and stuff like that. But yeah, it just feels like if there's one guy you want to kind of lock in and you're willing to pay that money to, Derek White's that guy.
So looking at big picture now, and we'll get into the offseason a ton here, like in the months to come. There's a lot to really get nitty gritty.
But that's all people want to hear, right?
That's all you want to hear right now. But like, I can't help but notice, like, for all these quote unquote big decisions the Celtics have ahead of them right now, it's like, okay, Joe Mazzulla, yeah, like rough year, but like, what else are they going to do? Mm-hmm. Four coaches in 4 years. Can they really do that? It's like, but like, what's the alternative? Jaylen Brown, same situation. Supermax, like, ooh, like, they kind of have to give it to him because what else are they going to do otherwise? But what is that going to look like in a couple years? Mm-hmm. And so it's, to me, from the front office standpoint, it's like, you are, given how this core has responded in these spots over the years, from a player-wise, from a development standpoint, like, almost everyone on this roster took a step sideways or a step back this year, I would say.
Except
for Derek White. And so now, like, you have, there's a lot on you right here in terms of, like, if you go with the highly favored run it back scenario with some tweaks on the edges there, you risk, I think, slipping back a little bit more here. And then putting yourself in a real tough, you know, conundrum in a year from now, if it's like, all right, that wasn't enough still. And we really don't have any options now with the limitations that we're facing with the new CBA coming in.
To me, the flip side is if you win a championship in the next 2 years, you've sort of given yourself the, okay, we'll figure it out. Like, you got one. Yeah. And so, like, if I look at this team and I say, what is their best roadmap to a championship? I don't necessarily think trading Jaylen Brown for random aging superstar or spare parts or whatever the case may be gives you a better chance in the short term. So as much as it's frustrating that this core hasn't been able to take that next step, and despite all these trips to the Eastern Conference Finals, all you have to show is one NBA Finals loss that, you know, again, you're kind of kicking yourself. I'm not sure I see a better roadmap to definitively being a championship. Now, if something we can certainly revisit the Jaylen Brown, Kevin Durant thing from before the season. And if a deal like that pops up, like, I'll listen. I still don't know, because I know in the moment I was pretty staunch that you stick with the guy who's 26 and all NBA and all that. But certainly it's worthy to at least ponder what's out there. Like, as I hear everybody start talking about Dame Lillard and stuff like that, it doesn't excite me anywhere near the level of a Durant. So, and then you go the opposite way. And I know Ryan wrote about it this morning, but, you know, do you call San Antonio, and do you call, I've seen others pitch, call Memphis and ask about Bane, which talk about life coming full circle. I just don't know if those do anything for me. I think you're taking more of a risk there that now all of a sudden Tatum's looking around going, this is the supporting cast. This is what I got. This is what I got to carry. And there's a chance that goes sideways. So my general, and I know people hate the idea of running it back, but my general inclination is you get Jaylen to sign. You say, okay, Joe's back, but we're going to beef up that coaching staff in multiple ways, not just like one addition, probably like a veteran guy, a veteran player who isn't afraid to kind of call Tatum and Brown on their ways, wayward ways. And then, you know, maybe Steven Silas is part of that too, so had some former coaching experience. And then you take a hard look at your core. You know, we were talking about on the drive home last night, like, Malcolm Brogdon's probably a negative asset. I don't know what you're getting for him, but if you could move him for a backup center and get off the money a little bit, you know, probably fits more of what you need right now. So those are the decisions that you got to look at. And I do think there's a hard conversation about Smart. But for me, it's pretty much I'm packing up Jason, Jalen, Derek, Rob, maybe Marcus, Hauser, and you're just kind of figuring out the pieces from there, you know? Use Gallo like you should have at the deadline. You brought up that great point last night. I started thinking about it. I got mad. And figure this thing out. Like, get some more players that fit how you're trying to play that can mask if you do have to downshift a little bit in losing a Brogdon, and make it happen.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, it's, and you look at Tatum's comment on Brown last night too, like all this talk about, like, they made, when they didn't pull the trigger on Durant, I don't even know if like the Nets would ever dealt them to him to the Celtics in the first place.
Right.
If they're not doing that, like, you're not, there's nothing else on the table that you're going to get from Jaylen Brown right now when you have Tatum endorsing him staying here. That is not going to, like, that's not happening. They're like, you're going to look at that to you, like, as you said, like in a year or two, you have this a little bit of a runway here to like give another crack at it.
Right.
With better parts, better fits around them. But that's not going to happen. The Joel Mazzulla part of this. And I think, I mean, I wrote about this after the Celtics went down 3-0. I think Brad Stevens needs to like, should be front and center here to take some ownership. Yeah. Like this was like, especially when Stoudemire went out the door. And I know it's tough to add people midseason, but like you, and I don't know if it goes up to ownership too, but like you, this is when you have this kind of like, you pay a head coach's salary for someone to come in here and like fill that gap, or like pay whoever you want, whether it was, you know, Vogel, like we've heard all the names. I think all those guys for the right price would have come in here and have done that. And now for when you look at how this series played out and the games that slipped away from them, and it starts with the players, but it's the value of having a voice like that on the bench for Joe, and from a player's perspective, it's like, that's something they're going to like, that's going to sting for a long time, I feel like. And it's, I think that's going to leave a pretty big mark.
I'm with you. And I think we were talking last night about how quick Brad will talk here. I do think probably should get out ahead of it and probably try to do that. I know it's easier to just kind of wait and let people kind of come back to earth, but it would be good if he came out and said, look, you know, I thought I built a good roster, got Malcolm in here, kind of shored up what we thought we needed last year. Injury hit at the wrong time for him, but I failed my coach. You know, I put my coach in a tough spot, and there was a huge talent drain from Ime and Will Hardy and Damon Stoudemire, and then obviously Joe vaulting to the front, and you're left with a group that had, I mean, if you go through and total up the number of games of it, like of just say playing experience that the Celtics bench had, it's like, I think it's in the teens of NBA games played.
Wow.
And the number of games coached is few. And so I just don't think you put your team in the best position to succeed based on that. And Celtics have hit a history of not wanting to overpay for like assistant coaches, and okay. But you know, the numbers are out there today about what Joe's got left on his contract. You're paying him what, $4.3 million per year. I think Brad was up at $6 million. So you're somewhere, some money to play with in the past. So, you know, use some of those resources. Get a coach that can strengthen that bench that Joe can actually go to and be like, what should I do in this situation? Because I'm not sure he's looking at, and no disrespect to Ben Sullivan and everybody else, but, you know, like, do you trust those guys when they haven't been through the fire completely? Well, I guess Ben won a championship, so, you know, it's hard to come down on him. But there's just not a lot of experience on that bench right now.
Yeah. It's between that and the and you can see like the Gallinari stuff. It's like he's going to come back next year, not look great in 30 games, and they're probably going to have to trade him then for like salary concerns. And then it's just like, okay, well then what are we doing here? Like, why? I know it would have stung. It would have looked bad at the trade deadline from a morale standpoint, but you compare it to where you are right now, and you're just like, oof, like. Mike Pascal, that was it.
And look, the other thing I go back to is Brad has been pretty much the golden child since elevating to this role, and has gotten a lot of like positive for what he's done, and deservedly so. He just kind of has to take ownership that in spots that could have helped the team this year, he didn't do it. And I guess that's what I go back to, like, why I'm frustrated with Mazzulla. You know, the coach can't necessarily save them players from themselves at all times, but he can try. And I don't think Joe always used everything at his disposal, from the timeouts to the way they played, to maximize his team's potential. So I go back to it. Everyone is at fault here, and everyone needs to be better, and they all need to take ownership for it.
It's a good point. It's like all year long, Joe's like, yeah, these experiences of like not calling time on keys, they're going to learn from this stuff. And then you get to game six and game seven of like, this is when it's on the line the most, and the end of that game six before White's put back, like that meltdown would have been legendary. But in hindsight, maybe they wish they had happened, because it would have spared them from getting booed on their home court in a game seven in another spot where it's just like, okay, like Tatum can't do what he usually does. Like, how are we going to figure this out? How are we going to like play through this improvised offense? And they just had absolutely no plan B when the shots weren't falling and when everyone was just pressing to do too much. And we knew that about this team, Chris. Like, this is why it's not on Joe from that standpoint of like, this is 3 or 4 years of like this core of like kind of drinking in these moments. And it's admirable that Joe thought he could like let them play through it as a way of fixing that, but that clearly is not the solution here.
And that ultimately is the only thing that gives me pause with the whole run it back suggestion. Like, again, I think there'll be small tweaks on the outside and getting the money in line for when the CBA does become more prohibitive. But I do worry that just bringing this group back doesn't solve some of their more overlying issues that have lingered through years. So, you know, I don't have any answers for that. Like, help me out. Like, what do they do? Is there personnel? Do they just need someone like a veteran player that can steer them in those moments? Does coaching, is that enough to get them on track? Like, help me piece this thing together, B-Rock.
I'm not going to be optimistic unless there's some type of shift beyond, you know, like if as expected, Brown's back, Mazzulla's back, the guard situation, like you move Brogdon, do you keep Pritchard and just say, hey, Payton, that was a pretty, like, we probably should have spent that first round pick and, you know, all Aaron Nesmith and everything else there on something where, yeah, Brogdon is better than you, but is he enough of a, like, would we have been better allocated those resources to a different part of the roster? After this playoff run, it looks like, yes, I know Brogdon was hurt, but even before he got hurt, I think he wasn't a guy that was a game changer in these playoffs for them.
And to give them the benefit of the doubt there is that it took until the playoffs to realize like what Malcolm Brogdon's limitations were. And like in the regular season, I fell for it. I was like, wow, you know, the scoring punch and just the steadying, you know, he did provide some of the ball security that they didn't have, but then he gets the playoffs and you just tell teams were targeting him, you know, didn't always hold up well in those situations. And then when the scoring disappeared because of the injury, it's like, what's he giving you? And that's, maybe that's not fair because he was injured, but just a tough way to kind of finish up there for Malcolm. And just like you said, when you've got $60 million committed to guards, you know, you start looking at the totality of the roster and thinking, man, they probably need that in other spots. What happens with Grant?
Oof. I think he's back on a deal that both sides probably aren't crazy about. Like, from a standpoint of like, I don't know where Grant's getting paid, where he wants to get paid, like who's going to, you know, like guys get offer sheets in restricted free agency, but this is one where the Celtics, certainly they can't afford to lose him in terms of how they can replace him. And I don't know if Grant's played well enough this season, given him being jerked around to a point where like what team's going to throw like $15 million at him. Like it's hard to kind of foresee that happening either.
That's my issue is like, I would love to tell you definitively if the Celtics should pay to keep Grant Williams, but I didn't see enough of them at the end of the season to necessarily know. And so, you know, the coach complicated matters there where we could never figure out if they were committed to Grant or not. And then it was so vital to at least getting that thing to 7 against Miami. So I don't know. It's just, they've, every turn they could, they made their lives more difficult at every level than it needed to be. And now, you know, all right, now you got some tough decisions and not a lot of easy answers. I do think so. The qualifying offer is 8. I mean, the reports were what, that they were willing to go to $11-12 million,
yeah,
in, you know, before the deadline. I think, yeah, before the, yeah, the extension deadline. I would suspect they'd be willing to go there because of they don't really have another option to fill that role. And yet, does a Charlotte come out of the woods with a $15 million offer and hope they're finding the next Caleb Martin?
Gordon Hayward says hello.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They love former Celtics down there, so.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's wrap up on this then. Jaylen Brown negotiations.
Is there a negotiation?
Is the question. Is there a negotiation?
There's none. You can't do that. You want to talk about the quickest way to really mess up your summer? Start playing around with that negotiation. And then I promise you, this team is in a heap of trouble. Like, what are you saving? $2 million a year when you're going to pay a guy $50 million? Like, let's not. So you pay the players that are supermax eligible, supermax money, and you deal with the pain points. So, I mean, I really just think that would be asking for trouble. I don't even think you can think it. I think you just have to.
I think you can
like,
think it after that game seven now. I don't think you can think it after.
Were you thinking it when he was the best, most consistent player over the last like half of the season when Tatum was struggling and fading from the MVP race and Jaylen were going for 30 a night and thought he was a mass superhero?
That's what I mean. That's
yeah, no,
Jaylen
I know. We're all prisoners at the moment, but I just think, and I get it, you're always going to think there's something better out there, that it's easy to go get the top 25 player. And, you know, again, we can debate where Jaylen ranks in the hierarchy. I get people at work telling me all the time, like, he's definitively not a top 20 player. And, you know, look, he's got flaws. If Jaylen did nothing but go dribble a basketball in a pool this summer, you know, like, whatever he's got to do to tighten up that handle, I think it alleviates a lot of what ails him. And, you know, he's just got to commit to it. And I know it's not that he didn't in the past. Like, am I crazy? Like, wasn't his ball handling better at the start of the year? And then somehow it just completely evaporated.
Yeah. And you wonder, like, how much of that is like fatigue or the nerves of the playoffs or whatever.
Right.
That this, like, you know, it comes to roost every, you know, on the biggest stage. And like Miami, give the Heat credit, like, they know how to, like, they know exactly where his pressure points were, and they attacked it ruthlessly in game seven and most of that series, to be honest, and kind of put him in a brutal spot. But
I don't want to be the optimistic guy, because I'm certainly not in the optimism camp at this point. But so let's say they do run it back and you come back and Rob's definitively better than he was the entirety of the season, and you actually play Grant, and Jaylen and Jason continue to make strides. Are we sure they're like, you know, that running it back's not the best option?
Yeah. I mean, you look at like, look at the Nuggets this year as a team of like, they just kept it together. They kind of took their lumps.
Even the Heat, right? Like,
yeah, Heat, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, careful what you wish for.
No, I think your logic on that front is the one we're going to see. And the question is, can they get creative around the edges with it?
Mm-hmm. I hope Zarin's ready. This is a big offseason for Zarin.
Huge offseason. Like, to figure all this out while keeping the long-term path to contention open with all these new rules coming into effect. Half of them we don't even know about yet with this new CBA. That's going to be it's going to be some long nights. Trying to
Ryan's got everybody in panic mode already.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a, they you know, their windows.
And,
two years.
I'm with them. Like, I mean, it is stupid. The second apron is going to make things difficult. I just, you know, for me, it's like, I'm not very good about looking to the future as a writer or person. So I'll worry about that when we get there. Just like next year should be the priority. And that's to me, that means bringing it back and using all your resources and all your savvy cap gymnastics to put this team in the best spot. And let's hope the Celtics are ready for that. Or maybe you hit the lottery with the number 35 pick and find someone who can help you and you play Hauser. And again, a lot of crossing your fingers in my plan here, but maybe it'll work.
You're just hoping for Yamadar to come over and
sell things. There's definitely competition between Yamadar and JD Davison and, you know, number 35 pick and Juhan Bagaron should be enough to get us through July.
Yeah. So, well, stay tuned for that in Las Vegas. Suddenly those games have plenty of meaning now. But in the meantime, Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston, he'll be continues to do it all there. We'll be on all week long on those airwaves. And hopefully we'll be going on a nice vacation soon.
I hope I continue to go on a golf course eventually. It's been a rough May. So, you know, small blessings, but I wish we were watching this basketball team for two more weeks. Unfortunately, we're not.
Well, at least they dragged it out for four more games for us for fun, yeah, but
fair.
All right. Thanks all season long, Chris. Thanks to all you guys for listening all season long. We'll be back with you guys again later this week with even more deep dive into the offseason choices that are at hand. And there'll be plenty more of that to come here.